You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 303 of the podcast. And in this episode, I got on Tapio to talk about his OCD story. And Tapio is an aspiring film director from Finland. And in it, we talk obviously about his story in detail, sexual orientation themed OCD, health anxiety, gender identity themed OCD, going inpatient. We discuss meditation in detail and how this was helpful for him, how having friends with OCD and sharing humor about it in tough times was helpful for him, how he views intrusive thoughts, words of hope, his core fear, and much more. And thanks as always to NoCD for supporting the work that I do. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. If you wanted to find out more about their therapy services and whether they take your insurance currently, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description. And thank you to you guys, as always, for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Tapio. Welcome to the show, Tapio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nah, it's good to have you here. And as you may know, I like to hear people's OCD stories. So as little or as much detail, it'd be good to hear yours.
Yeah, well, it's a long story, like everybody usually has. I think I have been a somewhat neurotic person my whole life, but I think when the OCD really hit me like lightning was when I was 14. I still remember the day. And it started with sexual orientation OCD. Mm-hmm. I was camping with my dad with the camper one, and for some reason that morning, I just got the idea that what if I'm gay?
Yeah.
And before I've had, because nowadays I identify myself as somewhat bisexual or something like that.
Yeah.
So those thoughts of like same-sex attractions wasn't like new to me, but for some reason at that day it just hit me that what if I'm gay?
Okay. Yeah.
And it was like I fell into this pit and I couldn't get out. It was just pure hell from that for 14-year-old teen, because of course obviously today for me it would be like totally okay if I am homosexual, but
yeah.
Nowadays I know that it's not the case, but at that point it was horrible thought. It continued for years, the rumination around that, and I also had hypochondria or health anxiety alongside of that. I have never been afraid of germs or anything like that, but it's more like diseases you can have without knowing it.
Okay. Yeah.
So like STDs was big deal for me, HIV and those, and also some neurological diseases like MS or something like that, and you name it, I've been ruminating about it. Yeah. And so it was for years, it was actually between those, I had these periods of sexual orientation OCD, and then I was like hoping that I would switch into the health anxiety for a while, that I would get like a break from the other side of it, and then for some reason it changed for a while, and then I after a while was hoping that I would be on the other side again, because I just got so sick of the thoughts. And yeah, it was for years till, I don't know, when I was 20 or something like that. Then I kind of hit rock bottom with the OCD actually when I was 23, I think, when the sexual orientation OCD went even deeper to like gender identity OCD or trans OCD or whatever it's called, because I was actually, I still remember the day I was helping my friend who was filming this documentary film about his friend or her friend actually, about a friend who is transgender and like female to male transgender. And I was recording the audio and I was listening to her story, and she just or he just told his story, and I got this idea that what if all my anxieties are based on that I'm not like comfortable being a man. And then again a lot of rumination, and then I actually ended up in a mental institution for a while because I was so messed up from that.
Yeah.
And and that was the point when I kind of realized, when I was in the mental institution ward, that something has to change, that I can't just wait for things to get better, and I need to actively start to do something. And then I went to therapy for 3 years, and ate some SSRIs and NRIs, FXR, and those medicines, which I'm not eating anymore. But I forgot that. And also ROCD has been involved in my life alongside of those, that when I've been dating with trying to date when I was younger, then I basically asking a girl out on a date was a similar experience to me as like proposing her, that I felt like that I'm totally prisoned if I ask her out. Sure. So those are the themes I've been dealing with, and maybe not so clearly explained, but anyways, it's been a mess for years. But nowadays, I don't believe like getting cured from OCD, but I believe more like learning to live with it. And now I have learned to live with it pretty well. So I'm on quite stable place at the moment.
Good.
So that's it in a nutshell, like the history with OCD. But of course, it's you never know when the troll attacks you and latches into something, some area for life.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing. So you were sort of 14 on that camping trip when it first kind of hit you.
Yeah.
Would you say there were any signs before that age? Or was that really like just out of the blue, it kind of happened?
I said in the beginning, I think I have been a somewhat neurotic person my whole life, even when I was a kid. But it was more like not so much of obsessions. It was more like that my ways of dealing with stress and anxiety was to do these rituals. Physical or mental rituals, but it lacked the obsessive side before the age of 14. Yeah. So that in that way, I had some signs, but
okay, fair enough. And with the psychiatric hospital or institution or inpatient unit, What was that like for you? You had that kind of epiphany where, okay, I need to do something now. I can't just wait for it to get better. But what was it like being in there?
Actually, even though I was totally messed up, I still had my sense of humor left. I was actually kind of disappointed about the experience because I was expecting more like a One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest movie-like experience. Well, there was a couple of quite interesting personalities, but it was quite restful to be there. It was, even though, of course, I was totally messed up and very anxious, but at the same time, I felt kind of in peace there because the reason I wanted to go there was that I wanted to be in a place that I don't have to think about my family's emotions, that I was just able to be in a place that I'm just like lying on a bed or something like that, that I don't have to be a burden to my family, even though I of course know that they don't think that I'm a burden, but still that was the reason I wanted to, why I wanted to be there. But still the experience was good because I felt that when I got out from there, I, with the realization that something has to change, I was actually quite energized to fight against my mental health issues. But of course, I was still just a mess after the experience. But
absolutely, and was it the kind of realization that, okay, I need to do something for this to change. Did that just come to you being in there, or did it come as a result of like therapy you had in there or group support or anything like that?
Mostly, I just realized it by myself. Yeah. It was just, I just felt that I have been waiting for things to get better for so many years that it's not coming by itself.
No.
That I have to actively, it's cliche to say fake it till you make it, but I think in mental health issues wise, it's true that you have to, like, it feels like faking when you crawling out from the pit, but once you are out, it starts to feel real. So that was the thought behind it.
Yeah, really good point. I think that's a good way to look at it. Is, and sometimes when doing therapy for OCD, it may feel like this isn't working or this isn't going to work and it's an act and I'm putting it on and I'm forcing it. But like you said, over time, it kind of comes true, you know, fake it till you make it. And the brain relearns, etc. So with your family, because you mentioned them there, how was from the age of sort of 14 onwards until you went into the psychiatric hospital, how did it show up in the family? How did the family perceive the OCD and et cetera, et cetera? Just anything you want to say on that?
Yeah, well, it's not a weird thing for them because it's in the family. I mean, like, I think my only family related kind of like diseases are mental health issues. So both of my uncles, or actually all of my uncles, my mother's side uncles have had OCD / anxiety / depression, something like that. And my dad, my mom as well, on some extent, and my dad haven't been giving me any opposite kind of genes that he also have had something like that in his past. So so it's not like they think that it's, well, somewhat normal to have mental health issues. So it's not like something I have been hiding from them in any ways. Sure. So it's been totally okay. But I think I have been in my family maybe the worst case in this sense. But I think that's it, how they have.
Yeah, cool. And you said earlier that you're doing okay now, like it's still there, but you've learned to live with the OCD. What changed for you from that realization in the hospital to now? What did you do to kind of help it get a bit better for you?
I think that the biggest influence in my life has been meditation. I went to Transcendental Meditation course 5 or 6 years ago, and I did that for a couple of years. But I actually think that Transcendental Meditation is, at least for me, as effective as just basic mindfulness. I've done it now for, not constantly, but like on off 4 years now. And it has taught me to have self-compassion and just to be okay with thoughts and with myself, basically. So that's the biggest influence. But of course, like I said, when I was there at the mental institution, I had that realization. I haven't forgot that. I have still actively remembered that, and when I have had not so good times, I have just remembered that I have to push and not to wait for things to get better, and then they always do after a while. So I think those two, but of course also that I have maybe gotten a little bit older, and maybe something has actually changed in my head, like in neurochemistry wise as well, that I'm just not so unstable anymore. I'm not sure, but I think meditation has been the biggest thing. But also I think second biggest or equal has been that I have found friends who have been able to share these things, who have also experienced. Actually, I have a couple of friends who has OCD as well, so okay. It's been super helpful. And actually, my dear friend Sana has quite a similar like OCD that I have. So, of course, tiny differences, but still very similar. So, yeah, that's also a very big thing.
Absolutely. And, yeah, the community is important, and having people you can share it with and not feel judged by, you know, and for them to listen and also, you know, get it and say me too. And is that kind of been why having those friends has been really helpful for you? Or is there anything else on that?
Yeah, and also humor. It's okay, so good to have just like OCD humor.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm just like texting to my friend Sana, who's the friend I have and who has the OCD, some short message that my brain is melting right now for this or that. And she totally gets it, and the humor part is so important as well, not to take things so seriously. Because actually I think that taking life and things too seriously is what connects people who has OCD. Usually when I'm talking with people who has OCD, they tend to have this being too serious about the thoughts, kind of thinking, me included. But I've realized it, and the humor part with the people who has OCD is a tremendous help.
Yeah,
for that.
I,
I agree. It's a good point. Yeah, I think if you can get to a place where you can joke about the thoughts, you're showing your brain that this is irrelevant. This doesn't matter to me. Why do you keep showing me these thoughts, you know? And it's when, as you say, we take it seriously is when it's scary and when we buy into them and believe it and then we do compulsions, et cetera, et cetera.
Totally. And humor. Always it's always a good thing, but especially on this I think it's been one of the greatest things. And and humor with the kind of easiness what I get in my head when I'm meditating, that it's also supporting the not taking things too seriously. Because I think people usually has a wrong kind of idea about meditation, that it's about clearing your mind or something like that. But I think that the most important thing is just to be compassionate to yourself. And like, except for example, in mindfulness, if you are meditating and you get some thoughts in your head, which I used to start to beat myself, that why are you having these thoughts or something like that. But nowadays I'm just, I try to be polite to the thoughts, polite and gentle. Okay. That if I get some thought in my head, I'm like, this kind of person, I think them as a person, that I'm dealing with them as they would be a person, that I'm polite to them and I'm gentle to them and I'm not resisting them. And then I'm just, they just go away or stays, but they are not bothering me anymore. That's my idea about meditation and how it is so effective.
Yeah.
And anxiety related issues.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So if I'm hearing you right, so when the thoughts appear, you're kind of treating them almost as a person who maybe that person's rude and a bit afraid, and it sounds like you're treating them or speaking to them with compassion almost to the thoughts of, oh, there you are, you know, and being polite and just letting that rude person go on. Is that kind of what I'm hearing? Or
Yeah, and let them be. And it doesn't matter anymore whether they are leaving or not, because they are not bothering you.
That's true.
Of course, the thoughts disappears, but it doesn't matter if it's now or 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
It's because it's totally okay to be with them. So I think that realization with meditation has been tremendous help, not just in OCD wise, but in life in general, because if I think that the biggest problems in life are that if you're resisting things too much, and it's applies to the OCD as well, of course, because if you're resisting thoughts, they will
keep coming.
Resist. But it's also in general in life that if you resist things, it's a big stressor to resist things. I don't say, of course, if there is something wrong with your life, of course you have to like not live with it, but still it's different. You can do it from different place if you are not mentally resisting them. I'm not sure if you understand what I'm saying. But
No, absolutely, I do. That's a very good point. Obviously, there's things in your life that you can change and that should be changed if you can change them. But there's things in your life that you can't necessarily change. And I think that's where what you're saying about mindfulness comes in, of not resisting that and allowing it. And then when you allow it, it kind of bothers you less and then disappears when it's ready.
And I like that when you said that when it's ready, because I think that when the thought, when you treat it with kindness and being polite to the thought, I like to use the word polite here for some reason, because that's how I feel when I'm dealing with them.
Yeah.
That when you say that when it's ready, it feels like almost like I'm like when I'm having the thought, even if it's positive or negative or whatever, that it kind of like when you're cooking food and then it's ready and then it's going away. I'm not sure if that sounds totally ridiculous, but yeah. But still, I like that analogy of when it's ready.
Yeah, it reminds me of acceptance commitment therapy. There's a metaphor called the jerk at the party, and the whole thing is, you know, if there's a jerk, someone we don't like at the door of our party, they're trying to get in and we can not let them in, and we can basically stand at the front door trying to keep them out. But the problem is the party's happening, we're not enjoying it, and that jerk's still trying to get in. So we're using all our energy trying to keep this jerk out. Mm. And if we just open the door and let the jerk in, we're not going to be completely happy about it, but we're making space for him or her. And then we're able to re-engage with our party, enjoy our party, and that jerk will probably leave the party when they want, you know? But it's that kind of way of looking at thoughts.
Yeah, and also you might even get friends with the jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I mean, like, that's also a possibility that that it doesn't. I like it, and that the idea, and I feel the same way. So, so yeah. Overall, I think meditation and being not just the meditation, but the mindful way of thinking generally in life, it teaches you is not the only key when learning to live with the OCD, but it's one of the big keys, I think.
Yeah, good point. And with this kind of realization of how you view your mind, view your thoughts, how long do you think you were meditating before you started to kind of think this way?
Too long, and I would like people to realize these things faster than I did, because I've been now meditating for not constantly, but on and off for five to 6 years now. And I think that these are actually quite simple things, but I just feel that there should be more info about the like I said, that people usually have a wrong kind of idea about meditation, that it's some kind of like clearing your mind thing, and then when they are not able to do that, they're beating themselves about that, and that's not the case. And also, the meditation actually becomes very enjoyable after you stop resisting the thoughts.
Yeah.
And so it's every time nowadays when I'm meditating, it feels liberating, not the burden like it used to be.
Yeah.
So
that's good to hear. And remind me what country you're in?
Finland.
Excellent.
Yes. I live in Helsinki.
Okay. And what's Finland like around OCD in particular? As in, do people get it? Is there treatment available for people that want it? And just anything you want to say?
Yeah, there is, but I think it's here similar like everywhere, that people usually have little wrong idea about OCD, that I'm also OCD because I do this or that. Yeah. And I'm not offended about it, because I know that everybody is ignorant in some areas of life. I'm also ignorant in some things, and which I'm not aware, because they are not involved in my life. But still, of course, it would be nice that people would know what kind of hell it brings to those people who has to live with OCD. Generally, I think that it's same here as everywhere. People usually knows the kind of what it is, but not so deeply. But I think overall attitude towards mental health issues has improved a lot since, well, in the last 20 years or so. So it's not like a stigma to have mental health issues, which is very good, of course, because I think about mental health issues a similar way that somebody has diabetes or something like that. It's just malfunctioning in the body.
Yeah, interesting. I'm glad Finland's changed. I'm sure most of Europe has. I'm sure there's parts that are slow too, but that's good to hear.
Yeah, I don't think that Finland is pioneer in this sense, but still I think we are like on the same level as everybody else. So
excellent. Cool. So next question, I guess just words of hope for anyone listening, you know, who has OCD, just words of hope or support that you'd like to share with them.
Well, I think I kind of said it already with the meditation thing. I'm not trying to be too pushy with the meditation thing with people, because that never works if you're trying to push your own agenda or own ideas too much. But still, I think that, and also, well, like I said, the humor part. I wish I could say something new at this point, but still, I think I already said the words of hope with the humor part as well. That to have the idea of not taking things so seriously and to joke about things is so important. For me at least, and the people living with OCD who I know. So I think that's the most important thing actually with the meditation. So humor in a nutshell.
Yeah, I like it. So you can pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old you. What do you tell him?
I will tell 20-year-old Tapio that listen to this is actually ROCD related thing, that listen to those feelings you have when you are with the person, not the feelings when you are not with the person. Because when I was dating and having ROCD things, the thoughts always came when I was alone. But when I was with the girl, I had fun. But then when I wasn't, the hell break loose. So, listen to those thoughts when you are with the person. Those are the real, the thoughts and feelings. Yeah, listen to those feelings. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And then billboard, you got a billboard. What do you want written on that, like, advertising billboard for everyone to see or read?
I will say I would want to say listen to your stomach, which refers to not the saying that you should the gut feeling thing. Okay. but it's related to, it's kind of maybe a little bit hippie-ish or something like that, spiritual stuff, but that the referring to the like the centrum of the body, which is somewhere around your stomach or something like that. But because I have found that when you kind of like start to listen or think with too much with your just like head up here, it you forgot that you are like your whole body and all that stuff. Even though it will be totally cryptic to people, they wouldn't understand it, but that's the thing came into my mind. Yeah. Right now, fair enough,
thank you for sharing. And then lastly, is there anything else that you wish you could have shared today?
Yeah, I have actually, so like I was saying before, that I had that sexual orientation OCD and then which evolved in the trans OCD thing, that it's I would call it kind of like identity OCD thing, because the thing is that the core, you have to think about the core of fear when you, what is the core of fear when you have OCD, which is obviously differs from person to person, but my core fear has been am I living in self-betrayal or being not honest to people around me. So I think that's the same thing in sexual orientation OCD and trans OCD, that it's actually just identity OCD, because it's basically the question that am I somebody else that I have been always thinking that I am. And that's kind of liberating when I realized that, because then I realized that it kind of showed me in a way that it's the OCD, because it's just the same thing, same beast in different
clothes,
camouflage or whatever. So somewhat cryptically explained, that's the thought behind the sexual orientation and trans OCD, which they're pretty much the same thing for me.
Yeah, interesting way to look at it. Well, yeah, thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's great to hear it, and I know it will help others and hopefully resonate.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I mean, English is my second language. I would be much better to explain these things in Finnish, but hopefully I haven't been too stumbling with my words or anything like that.
You're good. Well, look, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.